faces a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Insane Things Podcast. What an insane week, by the way. Let's count them down, starting with number 7. A story I actually played a small part in. I'll get to that in a minute. It was the left's original racial hate hoax, the Duke lacrosse case. Now, if you notice something about these hate hoaxes, they almost always happen in even number years. Why? Because that's when midterm elections are, and big general elections, the Democrats lie their ass off and then use that to turn out black voters, who they know, if not properly motivated, will just stay home. That's the point of the hate hoax. Well, this week, 18 years too late, the alleged victim, Crystal Mangum, the stripper who went to the Duke lacrosse kids party, admitted, "I was never raped. I made the whole thing up." Allegedly, she's come to God now, and that's why she has to confess this, although it's mighty convenient that she's waited till after the statute of limitation is passed, too. But whatever. Who am I to judge?
I testified falsely against them by saying that they raped me when they didn't, and that was wrong. And I betrayed the trust of a lot of other people who believed in me, and made up a story that wasn't true because I wanted validation from people and not from God. I hope that they can forgive me.
Ironically, I was a young reporter then in North Carolina. Like everybody else, I was covering this case too. And it was legitimately my red pill moment. I was already a conservative. I'd always been. But I didn't realize the diabolical level at which the media lied until the Duke rape hoax. I'd always thought it was their liberal bias and they're really trying their best, but, and that's why they just could never see the other side of things. I didn't know how bad it actually was till my phone rang one day and it was an attorney. He had a source inside the state crime lab, and it turned out that they'd lied. They'd done DNA testing almost immediately after the case, but attorney Mike Nifong was hiding that testing. He'd bottled it up inside the lab and was lying about what the testing said. It actually said the opposite, that they were stone cold innocent. In fact, he'd been lying for months, and my source had actually gotten proof out of the lab, papers documenting this. Well, we checked it out and it was legit. And I can remember saying to him, "But why me? I'm just an investigative reporter. I'm good at what I do, but I'm on a weekly. Why not take it to the Associated Press? Why not take it to one of the big dailies in the state?" He said, "I did. They didn't want it." Wait, they knew? Yep. And I'll never forget during that couple of weeks we spent confirming this and running it by the lawyers and making sure it was legit, watching the hysterical, never-ending coverage by the left-wing media, knowing full well they knew they were lying. They knew these boys were innocent. And I was absolutely appalled by the things they were saying. They weren't misled, confused, or just blinded by their ideology. They were malignant, psychopathic in their lies. It changed me. It changed the way I look at the world. Well, we broke the story, and for about a week, they pretended we didn't break the story. But soon, local television news began investigating. They couldn't ignore it anymore, and before you knew it, everybody knew Nifong had lied. He eventually would be criminally sentenced for what he did. But the left got what they wanted. By the time Attorney General Roy Cooper would admit the next year that, hey, this whole thing had always been bogus, it was too late. We were way past the midterms. It's always this identical pattern with these hate hoaxes. Usually a midterm year, and those are always even years, sometimes an election year, again, always even years. And there's almost always huge exculpatory evidence in these racial hate hoax cases. In other words, stone cold proof that it didn't happen. But that proof is hidden, usually by the prosecutors, by the state, as the lies are repeated over and over and over and over. Only when we get to trial does the shocking truth come out. That was a plan Nifong was on, I think. In the meantime, the prosecutors flat out lie, suppress the evidence so it never makes it into the media, and try the victim in the media, usually with the help of Democrat Party key figures who further the story. They all require for the lie to thrive that the prosecutors lie and withhold the truth. And look, one of the best examples of this is the shooting of Michael Brown, we're told in cold blood, in Ferguson by Darren Wilson, the police officer. This was in 2014, of course, another one of those even years, where Barack Obama got in on the act, lied his butt off, so did Eric Holder, his attorney general. And so the public didn't know key details, like that Michael Brown had broken into Darren Wilson's police car, in which Officer Wilson was hiding from Michael Brown. He wrestled his gun away from him and attempted to execute him with it. Not only was Brown's DNA on that gun, there were bullet holes in the car. It's a damn miracle that Darren Wilson survived. But that story we wouldn't get till over a year later, when the DOJ finally put out a report admitting the truth. Or how about the George Zimmerman case? Same MO. The supposed white Hispanic, yep. The prosecution in that case withheld key details in order to help Benjamin Crump, the NAACP, and ultimately Barack Obama whip the public into a frenzy. Key details like where Trayvon Martin was when George Zimmerman shot him. He was sitting on top of him, had his head in his hands, and was slamming his head repeatedly into the concrete. Oops. Kind of an important detail. See how this works? This is why the trials in these cases are never scheduled till after the national election. And why the prosecutors pretty much coordinate with the NAACP and the Democrats. Oh, by the way, who was the chief prosecutor again in the Zimmerman case? Pam Bondi. Wait, Trump's pick to head the DOJ? Yeah. But back then, Florida was a purple state that had been won by Barack Obama. So I guess she was just batting for the other team because they were more popular at the time. Or something. Insane thing number six. World War III. Folks, I've been telling you for a long time that World War III was always scheduled for 2025. And it was always supposed to be a ground war after Joe Biden won. Joe Biden didn't win. Yeah, it was always supposed to involve a draft, both here in America and in Europe. The idea would be that a U.S. troops should be on the ground. Having World War III in Ukraine with Russia, commanded by NATO, was going to be super exciting. And a lot of people were going to get really rich. And a lot of people would end up with, you know, dead. But the swamp never cares about that. Yeah, so what you're watching right now is an abbreviated form of this. They couldn't do it before the election. They would have lost even bigger than they did, and they knew it, especially with young people. So this was never supposed to be a war conducted with missiles with nuclear risk. It was always supposed to be a ground war with, yes, modern technology. Well, they're having to do it fast to get it going and, you know, maybe risk a little World War III, nuclear Armageddon on the side. They don't care. They're homicidal maniacs. They're also not that bright. So here's what's going on. Incredibly, after Russia told America, stop launching missiles into Russia. We're not fooled by the fact that you use a Ukrainian finger to mash the button, especially seeing as you need your satellite technology to do the targeting, make the missiles go, all of that. We know Ukraine doesn't have that tech. We know the missiles are yours. We know this is an attack by you. Don't do it. We'll hit a NATO site. So we went, cool. Let's see what happens. By the way, Russia's been very clear, both in its doctrine and what it's saying. If we respond back to that, their next response will be nuclear, which the swamp doesn't give a damn about, apparently. So we fired the missiles to see what would happen. Thankfully, what happened was that a NATO target wasn't hit. We are, by the way, here in America, a NATO target, just so we're clear. That range of responses could have included us, could have gotten some of us killed. But again, the swamp doesn't care. So what Russia did was launch a staggering 93 missiles and nearly 200 drones at Ukraine. And by the way, our defenses of these missiles ain't that great because these are our missile shields. We only caught 81 of them. The rest pretty much wrecked a large section of Ukraine's electrical grid. By the way, it is negative 6 degrees Celsius right now. Anyway, whatever the bizarre case, NATO head Mark Rutte just told Europe to prepare for World War III and that they're going to need to go ahead and shift the economy of Europe onto wartime footing, which tells me that, like the Russians, they're pretty convinced we're going to hold World War III one way or another in 2025. Here's Mark Rutte, head of NATO, in a speech this week.
It is time to shift to a wartime mindset and turbocharge our defense production and defense spending.
Anyway, all of this had Trump in his Time Person of the Year interview because they just had to give it to him. They couldn't find a way around it, given, you know, the amazing year he's had. Anyway, Trump used his Time Person of the Year interview to beg them to stop this madness. Quote, "It's crazy what's taking place," he said about America, i.e. Ukraine, launching missiles deep into Russia. "It's crazy what's taking place. It's crazy. I disagree very vehemently with sending missiles hundreds of miles into Russia. Why are we doing that? Question mark. We're just escalating this war and making it worse. That should not have been allowed to be done. Now they're doing not only missiles, but they're doing other types of weapons." Interesting. I wonder what kind of weapons we're using. Anyway, "and I think that's a very big mistake," he said, "very big mistake. But the level, the number of people dying is number one, not sustainable. And I'm talking on both sides. It's really an advantage to both sides to get this thing done." By the way, another conspiracy, supposed conspiracy theory debunked. Yeah, Zelensky's been claiming only 43,000 people were killed in that war. Well, ABC News admitted that the figure I've been using is actually closer to the truth. It's a million. Dear God. Yes, a million casualties in that war, 370,000 injured, the rest dead on both sides. They don't break it down further. This for a war that is literally about whether Ukraine will join NATO or not. That was Putin's red line in the sand. Ukraine will not join NATO, he says, number one, because we promised him that back during the Minsk agreement. And we violated every agreement that we've kept with Russia. And by the way, they've been very tolerant about that. This was the last red line in the sand. Remember Joe Biden telling the world that Ukraine was going to get to join NATO, which triggered Putin invading. And then that creepy Vladimir Zelensky comes out a few months later to CNN and says, "Oh, that was a lie. Yeah, he was always telling me behind the scenes that we were never getting into NATO. He just said that." In other words, Biden tricked, or he just read the teleprompter, who knows. But whoever wrote the teleprompter tricked Putin into invading. Shame on them both. But for that, a million casualties? This is how absolutely stupid this is. Whatever the case, it's also literally terrifying. We have to pray that Putin doesn't take the bait and get into World War III by hitting a NATO-backed country, which is what they're trying to drive him to do. Thus triggering Article 4 and Article 5 of NATO, basically saying NATO would have to then, could then go into World War III, which is what they really, really want. They want to lock that in before Trump gets into office. These are stone-cold evil people. They're also incredibly homicidal and really dumb, too, which makes what Dmitry Medvedev said in November all the more terrifying. He said, "Look, you know, I get it that Trump doesn't want to go to war, but it doesn't matter to us because we believe that if Trump doesn't go through with World War III or puts a stop to it, that the deep state will kill him." Putin also has said as much. In other words, they're saying, yes, you know, we welcome Trump to come in, but we're afraid it'll get him killed and they'll go to World War III anyway. So we have to act as if he's not coming into office. Whew. I hope they don't really believe that. I also hope there's not some reason their intel agencies believe that, that we don't know about. Guess we'll find out. Speaking of Trump assassinations, the Congressional House report on that came out this week, their long-term investigation, and it quickly went to number one in the nation on Topic Pulse, that app that we pay so much money for in our company that shows us what the most popular stories are. And that's probably because everybody clicked on it trying to find out. There's so many unanswered questions that we just don't know from these assassinations. And after reading the report, you just won't know a damn thing. That's because the FBI wouldn't turn over a single document that Congress requested. Not one. Ditto for the Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. Secret Service. That's according to Fox News, and it's shocking. In fact, the report says that Congress needs to, quote, clarify its right to obtain information related to law enforcement investigations. What does this mean? It means that the FBI has completely cut Congress off. Even when Republicans control the House, they don't answer to Republicans. That's their position. They only answer to Democrats. And they'll hand over whatever they damn well please. But Congress is expected, of course, to keep funding them. What does this mean? Well, the Republicans, Congress, have fundamentally lost control of the FBI. That's a kind of important fact in this case, because this is one of the few events of the Secret Service's provided protection where the FBI has been deeply involved in its planning. Yep, that's right. The Butler rally, FBI, for whatever reason, we still don't know because they won't turn anything over, was deeply involved in the planning for the Butler rally. What parts? Don't know. Why? Don't know. Worse, quote, The FBI also failed to provide its digital analysis of Butler Rally shooter Thomas Matthew Crook's devices, along with Crook's online activity, as well as other specific documentation repeatedly requested by the task force. Oh, and the other shooter, Ryan Ruth, same with him. He had 17 cell phones. He'd just come out of Ukraine, remember, a country with an assassination list. They actually have bounties on the heads of Elon Musk, Jack Posobiec, and Tucker Carlson, just to name a few. Did Ukraine send an assassin? Because with that many phone numbers, that many actual phones, it sure looks like the guy had handlers. So was Congress able to get a hold of any of that info? Oh, hell no. What about any of his texts? What about any of his community? Nope, none of that. Here's Laura Ingraham on Fox News.
Now, it took us only, what, a few days to learn about Luigi Mangione's background and a little bit about what's in his manifesto. But months after Ryan Ruth tried to kill President Trump in West Palm Beach at the golf course, we're still searching for answers. Now, Ruth had 17 phones.
Wow.
Three tablets, a notebook with dozens of pages of names and numbers pertaining to overseas locations, and handwritten documents tracking Trump's movements. What have we learned from any of that evidence? And why did he have all those phones? And how are we still asking these questions? Now, it's not just with Ruth that we're lacking answers. What we've learned about Thomas Crooks, the man who shot President Trump 5 months ago in Butler, Pennsylvania. What do we know about him? Nothing. What was his motive? What was on his phone? Assassination Task Force Chairman Mike Kelly says they've tried repeatedly to get info from the DOJ, from the FBI, about his online activity and notes from interviews with his family and friends, but they got nothing. So months after two different men tried to kill Trump, we have no answers. But in 1 week, we've learned a lot about Luigi Mangione. Something isn't adding up here.
Even more bizarre, as Jesse Waters reported on Fox News, a Secret Service agent fired 5 to 6 shots at 5 foot range, 5 feet from the shooter, and somehow missed him. Here's the other problem. The Secret Service was notified at 2:30 a.m. that Trump intended to play the course, and nobody bothered to send anyone out there until Trump was already on the course. This is after the first assassination, and we now know the guy laid there in wait for about 12 hours. Insane thing number 4. America just switched sides in the war on terror, and Al-Qaeda is so cool again. We literally love them. I think I'm going to start calling them ISIS. Even MSNBC admitted this week that our CIA, our State Department, worked with the so-called moderate rebels to install them in Syria. As the standing leader of Syria, a dictator, Bashar al-Assad, fled to Russia for his life. But here's the thing. Bashar al-Assad was a really bad guy. You wouldn't want to live under him, but can you name the Syrian terror attack on the U.S.? Can you name any Syrian attack against the U.S.? No. But I can name plenty of Al-Qaeda attacks against the U.S., which makes it utterly bizarre that we installed Al-Qaeda this week. Literally gave them a country. And it couldn't have happened without the help of the CIA, the Pentagon, and the State Department, who armed, trained, and provided logistical support for the takeover. Sure hope they don't plan to do the same for the ensuing slaughter that's coming of the 750,000 Christians. Once you understand who we installed in Syria this week, you'll be utterly horrified. His name is Mohammed Ajalani, and he likes to kill U.S. troops. He's pretty good at it, too. That's why he ended up in Abu Ghraib back in Iraq. You ever see those commercials on TV? You know the ones where they're building homes for U.S. soldiers who've had their legs blown off in Iraq? Or for their widows? Yeah, you can thank Al-Jalani for that. He was the head of Al-Qaeda in Syria, but when we were fighting in Iraq, he did a turn there and he was very effective at killing us, but I guess we just don't care. Anyway, we made the mistake of letting him out of Abu Ghraib and he went back to Syria, where he founded a terror group called Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS. They like to do attacks on civilians, especially non-Muslim ones, which is a big part of why the State Department list them as a terror group. Oh, and they're still a designated terror group today. Al-Jalani himself has a $10 million bounty on his head from our government. Why? Because he's legit a terrorist. Again, one who used to head Al-Qaeda in Syria, but now heads a group with a new name and all the same guys fighting for him. And he is legit a terrorist, not my opinion. I actually read that on the wanted poster distributed in 2017 by our State Department. It says, stop this terrorist. Up to $10 million reward. But now he's like our best friend. So we've come full circle these 20 plus years later after 9/11. Can you ever have imagined during 9/11 that we would chase a dictator from power who has not killed us in order to install Al-Qaeda, a guy who has killed us? By the way, the Biden administration this week was quickly trying to remove the terror designation and the bounty from his head. Anyway, what you're looking at is Syria is going to become one big caliphate, one big terror training camp. And you'll see the results of that in the years to come when things go boom inside of America. The only question will be, which one of the terror training camps launched by Joe Biden will it come from? Will it come from Afghanistan, where he installed the Taliban in power, from Syria, where he installed Al-Qaeda in power, or from Libya, where Barack Obama installed a mix of ISIS and other jihadi fighters in power? It'll come from one, and it'll be catastrophic. By the way, we left behind the chemical weapons. Israel claims they blew up most of them from the sky. Let's hope they got them all. Insane thing number three has to be Luigi Love. Yep, the left is in a full-on swoon. They love assassinations. And if you think about it, it's the next logical step, right? I mean, what did they do during the summer of love? Final insurance industry estimate was $2 billion worth of damages. To who? Businesses. Because they were mad about something a cop did. That makes no sense. But anyway, they burnt down or destroyed about $2 billion worth of businesses, property, etc. So the next logical step for the left, given that when they have tantrums, they like to take it out on business owners who have, by the way, nothing to do with whatever they're mad about. The next logical step is, of course, killing those at the heads of those businesses. And the left couldn't wait. They were so super excited that Luigi actually struck back at the head of United Healthcare. Except one problem. Everybody speculated that, you know, it must have been because his claim was wait a minute. He was never even a customer? No. In fact, he's not fully sure why he did the assassination. I mean, he said it was time for him to die and all in his manifesto, and he threw out some stats like the U.S. has the number one most expensive healthcare system, but ranks 42nd in life expectancy. But then he admits further on, quote, I do not pretend to be the most qualified person to lay out the full argument against health insurance companies. Yeah, typical liberal. Very opinionated about who should die, but no freaking clue what he's talking about. But he did, whether he realized it or not, have a point about United. Maybe he latched onto them because of the ongoing lawsuit where they created an algorithm. And this is truly evil. They created an algorithm that's designed to reject the claims of people who have legitimate claims for things covered under their insurance, but that the company uses the algorithm to detect whether they're elderly or too sick or tired or financially unsophisticated to hire a lawyer and fight them. In other words, the company knows damn well they owe this money, but they victimize these people. Anyway, this algorithm's so effective, it rejects 9 out of 10 claims of people who legitimately are owed the money. And it's actually killed people. That's the scandal of it. And that's why there's this big lawsuit. Because look, if you go to the emergency room, you've been shot. Even if you can't pay, they've got to treat you. But if you have cancer and you maxed out your credit cards because United Healthcare won't pay for your treatment, even though they owe you payment for the treatment. Yeah, guess what happens when you go in for the next treatment? They deny you and then you die, which is pretty much the plan because it's cheaper for everyone involved. So whose fault is this? Well, AOC, Elizabeth Warren, this week said billionaires, but that's not actually true. It's actually the fault of the Democrats. It was a straight party line vote for Obamacare. And look, a company like United that does this has the highest claim rejection rate, genuinely sucks, victimizes its customers, would never make it in a real capitalistic society. But thanks to Obamacare, you're forced to buy their crappy product. Even worse, most states have 2 to 3 insurers approved that you can choose from. And so you have literally no choice. And so this is how we got here, folks. In a normal capitalistic economy, the one that the Republicans wanted to build for health insurance with a nationwide market and people able to buy whatever they want, whether it's just catastrophic coverage or full coverage or whatever, you'd have hardcore competition. UnitedHealthcare would never make it. They'd be like Bud Light. But since you have to buy their crappy product, well, they can rip you off. So any leftist who's really, really mad about this kind of thing really should take their rage out on the front lawn of the Democrat National Committee, where it belongs, because again, Republicans fought this system tooth and nail. But Luigi was only like 11 when we were having the debate over Obamacare. So like he said in his manifesto, he doesn't have a clue what he's talking about, which is a damn shame because he's going to spend the rest of his life in prison for it. And you know what else is a darn shame? That our side didn't take this highly, highly valuable opportunity to educate Americans about why their claims are rejected and why their health insurance is so expensive and yet at the same time so bad. We should have explained it. We should have put the blame where it belongs on the Democrats, who, by the way, let the health insurance companies write this monstrosity. And meanwhile, I want to remind you just one thing. About these health insurance companies, about Obamacare. Do you remember how it was written? It was supposed to fail. It was supposed to fail. Health insurance was supposed to become exorbitantly expensive for the middle class and the upper middle class in order to push them into choosing the other side of Obamacare, the public option, the socialized health care. And at the time, just about every conservative foundation out there did analysis that said we'd end up exactly where we are. Basically with the equivalent of death panels, which is essentially what you have now at UnitedHealthcare. If you're too weak or too sick to fight, they just stop paying or stop paying for parts of it and you die. That's what the lawsuit against them is. So it's succeeding gloriously. But what a lot of the left probably doesn't realize is that at the last minute, they ran out of votes for Obamacare. They came up one vote short, and the only way to get it passed was to cut out the public option. So all you ended up with was the crappy part that was designed to destroy healthcare after, of course, grossly enriching these healthcare companies who wrote the bill. Well, at the time, Nancy Pelosi explained that they would have to come back and get the public option passed. Well, they never were able to get the majorities and the votes they needed to do it again. And so basically what we have is a scheduled implosion of our healthcare system for the middle class and above. Now, below the middle class, they just get transfer payments. Remember, the middle class would pay more than their healthcare costs so that lower income people could pay less than their healthcare costs. So you have that on top as well. And again, it was all designed to implode the system for the middle class and get them on socialized medicine. That is why it is the disaster it is today. And that is why UnitedHealthcare is able to deny legitimate claims and get away with it. Because again, thanks to Obamacare, you have to buy their crappy product. Well, unfortunately, this is already inspiring copycat crimes among left-wingers. They just caught a woman in Florida. So this is all the rage. People are probably going to die, and no one will even know what they're fighting for. So pretty typical for the sheeple on the left. Insane thing number two. Joe Biden and his administration have to know that over 700 terrorists off either our terror watch list or the world terror watch list have been caught at our border. And so they want to make sure they can get through. That's right. They're scrambling, the Daily Caller reports, to sell off sections of the wall. In fact, they are hauling away. This is Trump's wall that Congress funded. Yeah, they're stacked in panels along the border. They never built the wall. It's sitting there, in the sun. Well, they're hauling off about half a mile a day, taking it to federal auction sites. And the bidding starts at $5, all in the hope of making sure it's gone and we can't be separated from the Democrats' future voters and various assorted terrorists who are coming into the country. Well, they're moving it as fast as possible. Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick, says that he has tried to buy that section of the wall and the Biden administration won't sell it to him so they can erect it in Texas. In fact, he says he's got $1 billion to buy it with. So we'll see who wins here. Patrick says that they are going to bid on it and try to give it back to Trump or at least install it themselves. Insane thing number one is drones. Drones as big as a car. Some drones as big as your garage, which means they're not legal to sell to the average hobbyist in America. And more than likely, this is a corporation or government of some kind that possesses these drones. And I think that Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene speaks for all of us when she assures us that the government knows damn well what these are and who's flying them, and that they're playing a silly little game with us that's beginning to terrify the American people.
Well, number one, I'm going to call it total bullshit that no one knows what these are. And I think it's a slap in the face to the American people to say they don't know what this is. They can track down a guy that just killed a CEO, but they can't identify what nightly drones are and where they're coming from. I think that is absolutely disgusting to lie to the American people like this, and the truth needs to be told about it. Secondly, if they're telling the truth, then this country is in horrible shape. We're all in danger.
If you actually sit and listen to the messaging on this from our government, you'll see why this is insane thing number one this week. After the FBI spent 3 days at a congressional hearing assuring us that they were studying these drones, but didn't really know anything about them, where they were coming from, their origin, or if they're from one of our enemies, except they say they're not from one of our enemies, even though they don't know where they're coming from. Yeah, go ahead and make sense of that. John Kirby, spokeshack for the Biden administration and former Pentagon spokeshack, step forward to say, actually, there aren't any drones. No, it's just your imagination. Well, if there aren't any drones, what was the FBI studying?
We have not been able to, and neither have state or local law enforcement authorities, corroborate any of the reported visual sightings.
Huh. Are you sure about that, John Kirby?
And in New Jersey, Monmouth County Police released this heat map of reported drone sightings. This is just from the last few days. You can see they cover a chunk of the central part of the state. Lawmakers.
And weird, because the sheriff of that county didn't get the Kirby memo either, and he's calling for a state of emergency. Anyway, I'll let Kirby, who honestly sounds more like Baghdad Bob post-Iraq invasion, explain the rest. Bizarrely, within a space of 4 minutes, by my count, Kirby managed to contradict himself 12 times. That sounded a lot like this.
Upon review of available imagery, it appears that many of the reported sightings are actually manned aircraft that are being operated lawfully.
But then he also said this.
And we haven't seen
the government know what they are.
We are still investigating this. I can't tell you definitively. I cannot characterize for you definitively what these sightings are. I can just go back to what I said at the opening. We've looked at the imagery.
So they're not drones, but manned aircraft. And nobody's actually seeing drones, except also people are seeing drones. And they don't know what they are. And even though people are seeing nothing and are absolutely confused, at the same time, people are also seeing something, but you don't need to be afraid of it. They know, even though they don't know what they are. Anyway, the most telling part of that press conference, honestly, was when I was working on the audio and had muted Kirby, and I noticed he had a smirk on his face throughout most of it. Like, he was trying not to laugh. Why? Because he knows what they are, and he's having a blast BSing everybody. They're going somewhere with this. They're just not prepared to tell you where that is yet. And all week, the buzz was about New Jersey, but by Friday, these things would begin to swarm in California, in Connecticut, and even in Washington. I'm sure by Monday, it'll be up much higher. But you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of that Chinese balloon. Remember how we learned about the Chinese balloon? It was from a local reporter. And remember, at first, the Biden administration denied knowing anything about it. They pretended they were baffled. Then they said, okay, it is Chinese, but don't worry. It's just a weather balloon that blew off course. It can't even be remotely operated. Oh, wait, it can be remotely operated. Oh, wait, it does seem to be casing or military size. Oh, but you know what? We totally can't shoot it down because it's over land and we didn't discover it until it was over land. We don't want anybody to get hurt. Or wow. And then we learned they were lying about that too, that they'd actually watched it take off from China. Which means they know damn well where these drones are coming from. But anyway, we would later learn they were lying and they'd watched it take off from China, cross into international waters, and then cross into our waters, where, yes, they could have shot it down, but they chose not to. In other words, virtually everything about that balloon was a lie. In fact, they wouldn't shoot it down until the public uproar got to be such that they had no choice. And by the end of it all, at the time I was saying, they're buying the Chinese time. They're buying the Chinese time for whatever reason to gather the intel that they want to gather. They were letting them do this. They were lying to keep that balloon in the air. And my guess is they're doing the same damn thing now, playing games, running around, buying whoever is doing this time to keep these in the air. And by the way, we cannot eliminate the possibility that this is actually the U.S. government doing this. It wouldn't be the first massive hoax that they've run to terrify the country. Whatever the case, I will make these predictions, and I'm going to get this right. Number one, they knew all along what this was. Number two, they will reveal it when they're ready. And number three, we will know they lied from the beginning, just like with the Chinese balloon. And folks, that's what makes these drones so terrifying. It's not that they're up there. We could shoot them down. It's that America knows at a gut level that our leaders will not protect us from these drones. They will not protect us from these drones if these drones belong to our government, and they will not protect us from these drones if these drones belong to a foreign government. We are truly on our own. In fact, our government may actually collude with the enemy to allow the drones to harm us. That's what makes this so scary, not the drones themselves.
With Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.